Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to your yarning circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country as BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your say, but call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional owners across this beautiful country of ours. Welcome back, National Talk Black. Have your say and yarn up strong, you mob. All right, we're talking CIAF, Cairns Indigenous Art Fair. Comes full circle, 2023. Season heralds return to iconic one-stop arts and cultural hub tanks at the Tanks Art Centre, so where birth was given 2009, 69 years ago. Look, with that, we're going to catch up a yarn with Tio Ropian, CIAF, Cairns Indigenous Art Fair, Acting Artistic Director, and we have Tio on the line. Tio, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Trevor.
Good, brother, good. Before we start, brother, let the mob know who your mob, where you from.
Yeah, I'm from Yinjinu, at the very top of Cape York there. My mom, the Angamuti and Yarikana people from that region, so the northernmost point of Queensland and the Australian continent.
Yes, beautiful. Big shout out to you, mob. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Tio, so you're Acting Artistic Director for CIAF. How are you travelling, holding the reins there, brother?
Yeah, good, good. stepped into the role late last year.
Yes.
After Francois' departure, so she's been in the role for the last 2 years. So
yes,
taking over that position. And it's been good. We've been in planning mode for the event this year in July. And we just recently announced the move back to the Tanks.
Back to the Tanks, yes. Where CIAF was given birth back in 2009. 16-odd years been operating. So full circle, yes, as the intro stated.
Yeah. We're heading back there. I think the first two or three event was held there at the Tanks. So we're going back home.
Lovely, going back home. And also CIAF CEO, Dennis Stokes, still on board, yes?
Yeah, Dennis is here. And we've got a good team. We'll be bringing on a few more people, more staff members to build that team to get ready for the event in July. So, it's a good and great deadly team to work with.
Fantastic. And look, big shout out to CIAF. Look, it's a fantastic platform regarding First Nation art. And when you're talking about artists, are we talking across North Queensland, Cape York, Torres Strait, or do we go further as well down to Townsville, out to Mount Isa? Paint the picture there, please, regarding artists.
Yeah, so it's for all of Queensland. So all First Nations artists living in Queensland, or if you have that cultural connection, you're living elsewhere. But, you know, we've got mob in Queensland that are connected to or from other, tribes and clans and that around the country. So if you're a resident of Queensland, you're an artist for the First Nations, you can participate in the event.
Yep, fantastic. And when you talk about CIAF, we talk about art, but we also talk about art in all different shapes and forms. Would it be print, would it be paint, would it be musical as well? Can you paint that picture, brother?
Yeah, it's a big program, and it covers fashion. You know, we have performances, and art fair is the core focus of the event. But there's also art market side of the event too. And
yes,
we bring in musicians and performers. I think one of the key highlights of the event is the fashion performance.
Yeah, fashion designers, yes.
Yeah, so designers and models. It's a wide breadth across all, you know, the different areas.
Tia, is application still open for artists and for designers to come to the table?
Yeah, we have some EOIs out now, mainly for the Art Fair Showcase, which is the professional gallery setting, the white wall set gallery setting. That's open and it's on our website, so you can jump on our website and there's two there's the Art Fair Showcase as well as the fashion performer. So we're calling for designers now and artists, independent artists.
Yes.
Artists that are represented by agents or galleries and other, art centers and organizations, you can apply. So we've got an exhibitor pack on there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you can jump on, download the exhibitor pack, read all the information. It's all in that pack.
Beautiful.
For our artists. And then with the fashion EOI, there's a link there to fill out the JOT form application. That's for all our designers then.
All right, fantastic. So check out the webpage, CIAF, CIAF, Cancer Digital Art Fair. Great to be talking with you. Congratulations on your role there, Acting Artistic Director. Big shout out to CEO Dennis Stokes and the team. And good yarn with you. Looking forward to having communication up to the date. Now, when is the date we're talking, Kaya?
Yeah, so from the 11th to the 13th of July.
July. Yep, date claim. All your mob out there, stay tuned for that. If you're travelling to Cairns to see family, or you're going up to north to Torres Straits, and around that time, stop in Cairns and check out CIAF, Cairns Digital Art Fair, Friday 11 July, right through to Sunday 13 July. Good talking with you, my bella. All the best to you, and we yarn soon, eh?
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well.
Oh.
To Delhi. Beautiful yarn, Tia Ropian, and he's the Acting Artistic Director for Cairns and Digital Art Fair for 2023. And I will say 2023, I'm mentioning Emily from Wu Chopran Finance, who gave that slogan, and that was the opening for Wu Chopran yesterday morning that I attended breakfast in regarding the year ahead, 2025. But we are running with that slogan. So thank you, Emily, from Wu Chopran 2023. And thank you, Tia Ropian, and the Acting Artistic Director for Cairns and Digital Art Fair. Have you saying yarn up strong? Add to the conversation here on National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416.
Yeah. feeding on the rising tide. Local fishermen got a bag full, got a big and plenty mouth to feed. Man with the bag say, hey you, you're breaking the rules. Don't care what your rule is, you know thousand politicians couldn't change my way.
My land, that's the Pigram Brothers here on your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, yarn up strong. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. Call that number, yarn is yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from Recurry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. And we're live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on your dingy country. That's BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Israeli Service. Have you saying yarn up strong, you mob too deadly. All right, the Bennett Futures basketball team is lighting a spark in a generation of young Indigenous kids. With that, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Adam Desmond, founder and executive director, Bennett Futures Limited. And we do have Adam on the line. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning. How are you, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Where are you based?
Based in Perth, Western Australia.
All right, fantastic. Before we start, brother, who are your mob? Where are you from?
Yeah, so I'm actually, my kids are actually Aboriginal. I'm not.
We'll claim you.
I've been part of the Aboriginal community here in Midland for most of my life. My kids, their mum is actually from Country Victoria, part of the Kundjimara tribe, and they're... Been born and raised over here in Perth. So.
Beautiful. Fantastic, brother.
Yeah, very involved in the Noongar community over here.
Lovely. Fantastic. Well, thank you for your input. Let's talk about Bennett Futures Basketball. Tell us about who is Bennett Futures Basketball, the word Bennett, what does it mean, how long you've been operating for, and what do you do as in using basketball as the tool, brother?
Yeah, sure. So, look, it started off back in 2011. We... In this Midland area where I've grown up in, we've got very high population of Aboriginal families in this area. And when I grew up, I played all my basketball here and stuff like that, and I knew there was some teenage boys, or they were sort of primary school transitioning into high school, that were interested in basketball, so and didn't have a team, so I rang the local recreation centre to see if we could get a team in, and I had no idea, but for the last 10 years before that, they didn't have an association in our region, so there was no basketball here for any kids. The kids that I was probably trying to help out were the ones that couldn't, couldn't travel to other regions. They had transport barriers or financial barriers, etc. So it just started off as basically one day a week, picking up the boys, taking them up 30 minutes up the hill to Kalamunda, and playing in a weekly basketball team. So that was all it was intended to do. I've actually got a dry cleaning business, and that was kind of that's my actual job. And then this was just something I was just doing one day a week, just doing a bit of voluntary work. And what sort of happened from there was we ended up we had more kids that wanted to play. So within
are we talking boys year, and girls, sort of, and what ages we're talking, Adam?
Yeah, so it started off as just one team of boys.
Okay,
like year six and seven boys. And just transitioning into high school, and they become the first team. But then we had two teams kind of that age group for season two, and then we ended up getting a girls team, and then another younger team, and we just started organically building. And we started at that time, so back in like 2012, we started lobbying with our local council around getting access to the basketball courts in Midland and starting our own association there. Which we hit a lot of roadblocks along the way. So we finally got endorsed to be a basketball association. So as we built as a club, we sort of were travelling to different regions and playing. But we still always had this big sort of grand plan of having our own association in Midland and for it to be actually run by an Aboriginal organisation, which is what we had, I guess, come true back in 2022 December. The council voted in our favour for us to have an agreement with the city where we can hire the courts and run a basketball association for the whole community. And that started off in May 2023 when the centre reopened. It was shut for a few years with renovations, and now we run out of Swan Active Midland. So we've got it's a really growing association. It's been the first one in metropolitan Western Australia to have a basketball WA affiliated association being run by an Aboriginal organisation, for the whole community. So it's definitely been something we're really proud of after being, just a basketball club to start with, to get to where we are.
Brother, when you look at it being a former basketball player, when you talk about sports, it's a fantastic tool, teaches kids about winning and losing, about life, aspects of life, respecting coach, respecting players, respecting the rules. Sports, it's a very powerful vehicle as such in helping, young people thrive in life, And you've been a former basketball player, using basketball as the tool. This is fantastic, and it all starts with a thought, doesn't it, Adam?
It really does. It's something of their interest as well, and that's the thing. Like, if we find something that the kids are actually interested in, and then, it really does form. It's definitely formed a massive family. And from there, like them original kids that were playing in that very first team, they're now our coaches and our mentors and involved in our school programs and stuff like that. So we definitely rapidly grew from probably 2019, where we had around that time we had around about 15 or 16 teams playing, and then we just started really took off. We actually came over to Cairns in 2019 for the National Indigenous Basketball Championship.
Okay.
And had a big group. We and when I look back on it, like back then it was just myself as a adult, the rest were all young adults that were all the coaches and that.
Randon up cattle, brother.
yeah. And it was amazing, but when I look at our head coach of all of our junior teams that we brought across, so we bring about 60 kids across to Canada.
Beautiful, congratulations.
And we had some really good success on the court, but the really positive thing was the way that we had all of our coaches were led by our young people that have come through the program, every single coach.
Yeah, fantastic.
Which was amazing. So,
Look, that's some huge success, but also faced some heartbreaking setbacks as well. I mean, the mention of your young brother there, Cassius Turvey, who was was killed, being bashed, and died in hospital later on back in 2022, brother. He was a part of your program, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, and he's actually like a very close friend of my daughter's. They're same age and school together.
Condolences to the family.
It was just a really, things like that, it really shook the whole nation. And he was an amazing young man and amazing young leader in the community. He was someone that I think everybody that come into contact with Cassius had a wonderful experience. So it was something that really, really shook us all up. And some of his
And must continue, young brother, be looking down on you and continuing your basketball vehicle as such, brother. And I think he would be so thumbs up with that progress, brother.
Yeah, look, I think he'll definitely be really happy seeing some of the little breakthroughs that come along the way. We certainly miss him.
So tell us about the competition there. Do you play against other communities, do you? And you travel? Have you got a bus or paint that picture?
Yeah, so look, over the kind of the first probably 9 years of Binner, it was just solely funded by my dry cleaning business. So it was just myself volunteering and then any of the young fellows that could come out and help.
Yes.
But we didn't, no staff or anything like that. In 2019, we tried to be a bit more intentional about what we're doing and started to structure everything with like a board and the committees and all that sort of stuff so we could actually reach more kids and have the impact that we're having.
Well, we're talking about engagement, we're talking about basketball, we're talking about business, basketball, platform. Talk about put it through the ringers, partner punt, but too deadly, Mr. Cleaner.
And I think that's all, a lot of the stuff organically happened. We've always just responded to community need and the needs of the kids.
Exactly.
So, when we look at, we've rolled out some, we've partnered with like local AMSs and we've been doing these health embassies.
Yes.
So when we run a regional basketball tournament, we get like 500 or 600 kids participating.
Good.
So when all them kids are there and they're waiting for their games and stuff like that, we thought, well, what are some of the things that we can do of benefit for them? And so we've rolled out these health embassies where they actually...
Beautiful.
Incentivized, they can get a Binner basketball, a shirt and whatnot if they go through, get a little passport and go through and engage with all the health
checkups and what have you,
stuff like that.
Vision for the future, whatever,
consented, referral process and all that sort of stuff. So it's really been planned out well, and there's been a lot of the health organizations that have partnered with us now that it's really, one-on-one equaling three by coming together and getting some great results. So,
Adam, you're virtually slam dunking health in so many ways, brother, partner pump, but that's too deadly. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And look, thank you for the yarn. Congratulations. Please keep in touch.
Yep.
A big shout out to all them young ones there, and keep doing what you're doing, my brother.
Yep. No, thanks very much. Really appreciate it. And, we definitely hope to tour to Cairns again.
Yeah, come and join us.
First time I've been there, but it was a beautiful spot. And,
it is.
The basketballers up there are absolutely amazing as well.
Yeah,
it's really, really good space to go.
Adam, you take care. Big shout out to your family, brother, and we'll yarn soon.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
See you, brother. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Deadly yarn there. Adam, his name is Adam Desmond, founder and executive director, Binner Futures Limited. And we're talking about the Binner Futures basketball team, which is lighting a spark in a generation of young Indigenous kids. Look, fantastic. And very sad incident back there in 2022. Young Cassius Turvey, who was attacked when walking home from school, and he later died in hospital. He was a part of that program. Big thoughts and prayers and love going out to the family. And with us in spirit, young Cassius, and watching this fantastic vehicle travel forward, and basketball as the tool, vehicle, inspiring and guiding our kids in future and giving a bit of vision for their future. Fantastic. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong. Add to the conversation. Deadly number here, 1-800-422-416. You can text a brother as well, 045-714-0550. Otherwise, their Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. Facebook, Sookbook, Big Face, which way? Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416.
My name's Jared Harbrow from the Gold Coast Suns. You're tuned in to National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
1-800-422-416. 416.
Yeah, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country. That's BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to the NERS National News Radio Service for your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, 1-800-422-416. All right, Mapu man Jack Wilkie-Jans has welcomed the Queensland Government's review of Cape York Peninsula's World Heritage listing. The review announced of Queensland Environment Minister Andrew Powell on January 2nd follows a controversial nomination submitted to UNESCO by the Commonwealth Government and former Miles State Government in 2024. We're going to catch up a yarn there with Jack Wilkie-Jans and talk about this space. On the line, Jack, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm well, thank you. And you?
I'm well, thank you very much. Before we start, let the mob know, who your mob were you from, Jack?
So, one countryman, from Gossip Harbour Terrier, and Tepetigi and Chungunji man from Mapoon in Cape York Peninsula, Western Cape.
All right, beautiful.
But living here in Gimoy.
Living here in Gimoy. Thank you very much. So there's been a consistent critic of the World Heritage Listing proposal. You state, since the 1980s, we've been dealing with successive governments from both sides, politics, pushing this WHL agenda onto us, he said. So what's your take up on regarding World Heritage Listing for Cape York Peninsula?
Right, so I'll start by saying this is not about being anti-conservation and environmental. So Cape York Peninsula, especially the areas, I believe there's up to six areas that have been proposed for World Heritage Listing. Mm. These places and most of the peninsula have an incredible matrix, I suppose, of different policies, different kinds of land tenure, different kinds of legislation that protects the environmental assets and the management of country and care of country. We have native title, we have all of that. So just to begin, that is, those areas are very well protected as it is. Cape York, the people of Cape York take immense pride in looking after our country up there,
yes.
No matter what corner of the peninsula. So the issue I have with World Heritage Listing is that it essentially seeks to lock these areas out of an economic, playfield, I suppose.
For TOs, yep. Locks out business entities as such, is what you're saying?
Well, at least the aspirations that may be there, they may not be there today, but they could be there in the next generation. And unfortunately, once an application of World Heritage Listing is set, it's impossible to renege or remove. So it's about making a decision that the federal government have pushed and the former state government in Queensland here have pushed that really isn't, I don't think it's a decision that any one generation should be making. Especially when it comes to the future, we've got really not many economic options up in Cape York as it is. There is an economic downturn. The mining industry is, as profitable as ever, but it is not necessarily as sustainable. If you're looking at large-scale mining, maybe smaller boutique mining operations have better hope of regenerating country once those operations cease. But yeah, I believe that the World Heritage Listing is just going to put us out of any kind of future politically and also economically and socially as well, because when this isn't just about what economy can be on country, it's also about where people can live on country. But there's a huge movement across the Dogit Deeds of Grant and Trust land to leave necessarily the communities that have been existing, which are former missions, to live back on homeland. And that means the opportunity to be able to build a plot and build infrastructure to support, remote, even though Cape York is remote, but even, remote housing on country. So that opportunity is taken away from us. The opportunities for tourism are taken away from us. We hear other World Heritage listed areas, such as around the Daintree. It's almost impossible to do anything with the tourism that the Daintree attracts.
Yes.
In Cookie Ellenji country, you have, stories of over $100,000do a study on putting in a single toilet log on a World Heritage listed site.
A lot of rules and regulations that virtually prevent TOs operating, you would say?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And one of the other things with this proposal that's come forth, which the state government, now that the new Christopher Foley government are reviewing, or at least holding it back a little bit so that we can get some information out there on the ground, is being able to find out what are the legislative frameworks, what are the policies, what can we do or not do when it comes to land use and management that this World Heritage Listing will impact. And no one's coming clean with that. Everybody's talking about economic, but there's no business case that's being put forward. We're hearing stories from other parts of the world where, things have actually ended up really bad for people. They can't move, they can't sell property, they can't relocate.
When we're talking World Heritage Listing, does that mean that traditional owners have been given their land back to them, but they can't do things because of the rules and regulations? Is that what you're saying in some areas?
Potentially. I think with the issue with, so with World Heritage listing, you have to have a state government process called Cultural Heritage Surveying, and I think most people out there are familiar with what that is.
Yep.
So that is usually occurring on a native title land, and the problem, though, with it in Cape York Peninsula that we see for the most part, when land is handed back through a native title determination to traditional owners, it's not necessarily handed back as freehold, which would be what I would call equitable land tenure. You know, every other property owner in Australia gets a freehold lease.
Sure.
But when it's given back to us in the Cape, Cape York Aboriginal land, Cape York Peninsula Aboriginal land. So
a Clayton deal, you could say. A sort of deal you got that you haven't got a deal.
It's a non-deal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a huge proposal that means so little in terms of the information that's out there. And I think, you know, in general terms, taking a step back from World Heritage listing, it's a perfect example, yet again, since the 80s, of either side of government, so both the LNP and Labor had both at different times in the past put this proposal forward. It demonstrates a complete lack of imagination, a complete lack of actually any direction or knowing what to do with this Cape York Peninsula and around the 14 to 17,000 people, depending on the census count.
So New Queensland government, David Crisafulli, has opened up a review for Cape York Peninsula World Heritage Listing. That's at the table now, is that right?
Correct, but we don't know what that review is going to look like in terms of its terms of reference. We don't know what that direction of that review will be, what the outcomes will be. Obviously, it hasn't happened yet. But all I'll say to the government is, you know, we need to be at that table. We need to be asked to contribute not only to the review process, but to what the review is actually going to focus on here, because this has been going for so long. No political party really has any clue what to do with Cape York, you know, in the future, because Rio Tinto on the Western Cape is, you know, has probably a 50 years to go before that transitions. And, you know, Western Cape Chamber of Commerce are working very hard to try and map out an economic future, but that's the people of the Cape doing it on our own.
Sure.
Meanwhile, it's either lock it up and throw away the key, which is this World Heritage Listing proposal, or the other alternative is, you know, open slather, go for gold, go for uranium, go for lithium, go for whatever. So there does need to be a balance that is struck there when it comes to industry and conservation. But, you know, either direction at the moment being proposed is too far in those directions. It comes down also to, where's our autonomy? Where are we actually contributing to our region's future?
Well, exactly. If you look at anybody in this country who's got land, that's an asset, but not so for First Nation people.
That's right. And if you have this World Heritage listing in these beautiful corners of the Cape, there's no doubt that some of these sites that are proposed are absolutely gorgeous. But and let's say it is true. Let's say it does eventuate that we're going to have more than 100. We have around 100,000 road visitors. That's, you know, four-wheel drive campers and whatnot visiting the region each year. Let's say that shoots up to 300,000. And looking at the Daintree, and there's over $100,000, you know, bill just to have an EIS, environmental impact survey, done on one block of toilets. How are we going to service those roads? How are we going to service the rubbish cleanup? Where are those tourists going to stay? How will the country be protected? You know, are there going to be, you know, if we look at national parks across the Cape, they're riddled with noxious weeds and feral, you know, pigs and things like that. The national park system is broken in Cape York Peninsula as it is.
Yes.
You know, it's we need
review.
To be a bit more
welcome the review. To welcome the review, but First Nation people need to be at the table in regard to the review.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely so. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Please keep us posted, and let's keep an eye on this, and we need to be at the table. It is 2020 Thrive, and we need to thrive, my brother. But thank you very much for your yarn. All the best to you, and we'll yarn soon, eh?
Yeah, you're welcome, Uncle. You take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
There it is, Jack Wilkie-Jans and Mapu Man. They're just talking about how he's welcomed the Queensland Government's review of Cape York Peninsula's World Heritage Listing. a very important conversation there. But yes, black people need to be at the table regarding that. A lot of traditional owners up there on the big tip of Cape York in that area. So very, very important that we're at the table. Have you seen Yan Up Strong? We have 45 minutes left on the program. Yeah, actually, we have 15 minutes, 11:45 is the time. Shut up. Only got a one-hour program. Here it is, here on your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Where you from, my brother? I come from there, from another side. Me, you call a Kungai, from Yoruba.
So Barry Sirridge, a big shout out, BC to Delhi. Where are you from, my brother? This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Yarning up strong here for your program, 1 hour program here at the First Nation radio station here in Cairns on your dingy country, BBM Bumbadrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. We're going to catch up with, I think we're Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony Gibbs? No, I thought we had Tony Gibbs on the line, but let me just check. I think we do. Tony Gibbs, you there? Hello.
Yeah, I'm there, mate.
How are you? Go ahead, mate.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. All good, mate.
All good. Go ahead.
I was happy to hear that last conversation, the fellow talking about Cape York and World Heritage up there.
Yeah.
exactly the same here. Killed the whole nation. We've got the Rainforest Tribe in Cairns, Goldsborough Valley has been declared, which is upriver from Gordonvale, south of Cairns.
So you reckon Goldsborough Valley needs a review as well?
Oh, it needs a review, mate, because you know they got native title. They said then they got nothing, and then they said you only get native title if you that if that mob sign it back to an ILU and give it back to the Cairns Council. And so that's what happened. We worked 20 years from 18. From 19, it feels like 18, from 1989 and 20 years, 2009, they were granted native title, but not the rights to exclusive possession. And by that time, they'd brought in two other clan groups, which always outvoted the one Idingi group because it was a combined claim with three mobs. But the whole point was they declared it native title, which is the other fellow said, you can't live there. And to make it worse for our mob that all live around Gordonvale and can't live on their land, now they've shut the Green Patch Park and the river and our access, so we're all like imprisoned. I never, when I had another thing arranged, but when you come, so when they want to take water from the Mulgrave River in Gordonvale or the aquifer or whatever, and they've been planning this for 12 years, I've got newspaper clippings. They're draining World Heritage water upstream and the fisheries where me and Donna were caretakers for years and years, and a lot of other tribal people have maintained the camp. And that's the fisheries. It's called Fisheries Crossing where we were, and the bridge there got wiped out in the flood this year. They rushed in. I think they built a bridge for all the white residents in the valley. I mean, we lived up there for years. We couldn't even get the power on. Yeah, my missus got a lifetime work here that she did to be on country. On country, not in town in an exhibition or in someone else's art gallery, to be on country. And I live with that, like in a house-o position. You've been to my place once.
Yes, brother.
There's so much art in here that should be on country, and it's really hard to live with. It's beautiful for me, but it shouldn't be as it is. I'm surrounded by this.
And the rules and regulations that come with it.
Rules and regulations. I've got two crosses. Me and my wife's out in the driveway of their front yard. What do I do? Open our gallery here too, you know? I probably have the biggest crowd in Cairns come here. But I like my privacy too, mate. I talked to the council yesterday about the green patch, and they said, oh, it's open. I said, it's not bloody open. I said, the toilet block they built is open. I said, yeah, but the gate shut. No, it's still open. I talked to Tim Dendle a long time, mate, and they just tell lies. They said that they were only going to shut for us mob. No. They were completely locked away from country and people. I've got a couple of minutes, mate. I just wanted to talk about what I couldn't talk about yesterday. I wasn't very prepared. This problem all started with Bob Manning. Flyers wanted for bank robbery, riverbank. And then they pulled Donna's cross out of the thing and Manning resigned. Just when the cross is pulled out and I started coming on the radio and talking about it, he resigned. Terry James jumped into his position.
That's right, yep.
And he was there for a while, and then the deputy mayor became Brett Moller. And there's a picture in the paper with Terry James sort of hanging on to Brett Moller saying, oh, he's one of us. I'm not one of them. Anyway, he was deputy mayor, and then Amy Eden, your team,
after new election, as of April this year, last year,
Yeah, so we've got to be patient and get this out. And then Brett Moller, he resigned because he didn't like working under woman mayor.
No, Brett Moller is the councillor for Division 1.
Yeah, he's the division. He's responsible for Goldsborough Valley and the Green Patch, the Tis Patch.
That's right.
And a matter of the mayor was blamed originally for the closure of the Green Patch in Goldsborough. Like, he's the admiral of the fleet, and all these different divisions are like different ships, you know, they're different captains. Yes, like that. And so I think the problem is Terry James, I think, is a liberal. He took over when Curtis Pitt, our liberal member out here,
oh, yeah, you got the seat of Mulgrave. Yeah, that's right. Curtis Pitt resigned, didn't run again, and Terry James was one of the candidates and elected the seat. Yeah.
Right, and that's why we're wild, because he was rejected as Cairns mayor, and now he's the MP just down the road here, 20 kilometres. And I had a row with him on the 4CA mainstream station one day about the 7. Curtis Pitt resigned. So in a year, we've had all these changes.
Yes.
And the whole problem, I think, is goes back a little bit to Grant Healey, the member for Cairns, eh? Because he's in charge of the member in charge of the Cairns council area.
Yeah, Cairns area. He's a member of Cairns, which is the Cairns area. Yep.
Yeah. For Labor. Yeah.
He's a Labor. Yep. Representative.
Yeah, he's a real Labor, and I was a Labor man when I used to vote before I figured that I'm not voting for the enemy. I don't think Murray should be forced to vote, and I live and identify with the Dingy. And so that's my thing. And also, mate, because I'm from the other side of the planet and Crown Land and my personal battle, I can't change who I am, and I'm an outside view. I was happy to hear that fella talking about, you know, all the men in this tribe that signed away Goldsboro Valley are dead now. And there's a riderless horse there. And to the nation, to the Prime Minister, this tribe needs saving. We need some land tenure. And we need to be able to be buried properly without being hindrance. Because it is killing me, mate.
Yes,
I'm in a weak position. I've got different things. In June, I will be 1,000 moons old. If I last that
moons
long.
Old.
1,000
good inning,
moons.
My friend. Good inning, but not your time yet.
Not my time yet, mate. I've got unfinished business, and you know, I've got two crosses in my front yard. Anybody say anything and say, well, they should be in a cemetery, don't blame me. I have to do something. If I put them back in a cemetery in a pot, they'll just take them away again. If you buy a grave, you want a permanent thing on it, and they have no right to. No matter what their rules are, there's a human right to have a decent burial and your name up. And I'm not a religious fanatic, because their crosses, it's just a decent thing to do.
My brother, I'm hearing you. I've got to go to the news. Thank you for your call, and we'll talk soon, Tony.
Yeah, later, mate.
Thanks, brother. Tony Gibbs, have any say here on your daily program, National Talk Black, and Trinity Trev's about to sign off for today's program, you mob. Thank you for your company. Back in the hot seat in tomorrow. That daily number, 1-800-422-416. 24/7, you can text a brother, 045-714-0550, or have your say via our Facebook page as well, BBM987FM. Thank you for your company. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and we'll be yarning soon. Too deadly.
Australia, it's time to check your tech. The national 3G network is closing from the 28th of October. Your devices might not work when it's gone. From your phone to your smartwatch and your tablet, even personal emergency alarms, FPOS terminals, and fire and security alarms. Check your tech so you and your family stay safe and connected. Visit 3gclosure.com.au and act before the 28th of October.
Station sponsor.
When you need medical care, ask yourself, do I need emergency care?
Nah.
Is this something a GP or nurse can treat?
Mm-hmm.
Can I wait for a routine appointment?
Mm-mm.
If you have an urgent, non-life-threatening issue like a cut, minor burn or sprain, get the treatment you need at a bulk-billed, walk-in Medicare Urgent Care Clinic. Find your closest clinic and open times at health.gov.au/MedicareUCC. Part of making Medicare stronger. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra.
Station sponsor.
Mara Sound Productions.
When I was a young boy, I used to watch my old man.
Daddy, can you lend me Badu song?
And speak wah wah, you no forget my boy.
You like them Badu man, I say nah.
And speak, I go sing you this song.
This song is called the German Machia.
Na kizaka, mizaka, maika, na paiki wa urao.